Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Are we going to see members of Donald Trump's family using their positions to enrich themselves continually?
A lot of people speculating about Kushner wanting revenge on Chris Christie.
Kushner has a bold vision for the office, saying the government should be run like a great American company. And if they can't do that, run it like a Trump company.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast. I'm Virginia Heffernan. TrumpCast is the story about the father of the wife of the man whose father blackmailed his uncle by hiring him a prostitute and taking pictures for blackmail because that uncle was going to testify against that man, his own brother, on 17 counts of tax evasion and illegal political donations, of which he was found guilty by a one-time ally of the original man, that's Chris Christie, and sentenced to 2 years in a prison camp in Alabama. Did you catch all that? Of course, I'm talking about Donald Trump and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Jared's father, Charlie Kushner. The Kushner family are multimillionaires, well known to New Yorkers for their colorful exploits, so colorful, something about which the great New York Post columnist Cindy Adams might have written, "Only in New York, kids, only in New York." But now that Jared Kushner is ensconced in the White House and is charged by Donald Trump with fixing government, and is being questioned by the Senate Intelligence Committee about his meetings with Russia, and is also under scrutiny for his interesting financial ties to Chinese investors. Well, let's expand on Cindy Adams. Only in the USA, kids. Only in the USA. Today, my guest is Caleb Melby, a reporter at Bloomberg Business who's taken a particular interest lately in the complex financing of 666 Fifth Avenue. That's a building financed by the Kushners and vexed since 2008. Finding a way to bail out that building has put the Kushners maybe afoul of ethical standards around Trump's coterie using their offices for personal gain. But before we get to 666 Fifth, we do need the prequel. Caleb's going to tell us about those amazing Kushners and their funny, frolicsome New Jersey ways, and what their antics might mean for the USA. I'll talk to Caleb in a minute, but first the tweets.
What about all of the contact with the Clinton campaign and the Russians? Also, is it true that the DNC would not let the FBI in to look? Just watched the totally biased and fake news reports of the so-called Russia story on NBC and ABC. Such dishonesty. Obamacare will explode, and we will all get together and piece together a great healthcare plan for the people. Do not worry. The Republican House Freedom Caucus was able to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory after so many bad years. They were ready for a win. The Democrats will make a deal with me on health care as soon as Obamacare folds. Not long. Not to worry, we're in very good shape.
My guest is Caleb Melby. He's a reporter for Bloomberg Business, and he has a recent article called Inside the Troubled Kushner Tower, Empty Offices, and Mounting Debt. Caleb, thanks for being on TrumpCast. As I told you, Caleb is my favorite human name. I don't think what we have here is this flood of Trump news.
Yeah.
But it has a lot of tributaries that I think we could easily miss. And it's very hard to tell which are the, you know, the most salient ones and the ones to pay attention to.
I don't think anybody knows in real time.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you have been covering the Kushner family. This is this very wealthy, successful real estate family, originally in New Jersey, and now they have a lot of properties in New York City.
Yeah.
And Kushner, Jared Kushner, is Donald Trump's son-in-law, Ivanka Trump's husband. He has recently been charged with fixing the government.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm in New York and you are, we know a bit of his history, but I'm not sure everyone does.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth going over the Kushner's colorful, what's the word for it, checkered past. So tell us a little bit about the Kushners. Where did they start and how did they do it?
Jared Kushner is Ivanka Trump's husband, but he's the son of Charlie Kushner, who is the real progenitor of that family fortune. And he built the family business by buying up these garden apartments in New Jersey and Maryland and Pennsylvania. And these were, you know, middle class properties where middle class people lived and middle class people paid rent. Jared, there's a nice parallel to Donald Trump, whose father, Fred Trump, also did basically that same thing, but in Queens and Brooklyn. Jared had more aspirational goals for the family business. And when his father went to prison for 2 years.
I don't want to elide that story there. Tell us how he got there.
What they actually nabbed him for was for counting political contributions as a business expense, which is not something you can do. Although in New Jersey, you could argue pretty easily that they are an actual business expense. What really got the jury and what will haunt Charlie forever is he had some relatives who were aiding the government in their case against Charlie Kushner. And he hired a prostitute to seduce his brother-in-law and then sent a tape of it to his sister.
I mean, you are saying this in the same breath as real estate numbers. And
yeah.
It is, I mean, I don't even, we need a stronger version. Maybe there's like a Latin version of you can't make this stuff up that we could start using. But so that's right. He hired a prostitute and to blackmail his brother, who he felt had turned against him.
Yeah.
In making the case that he was writing off these political contributions. Political contributions, you also say, are de rigueur for some of these families.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in New York, in New Jersey, who gets to build on a plot of land, what they get to build, what sort of tax incentives or, you know, municipal financing they get. All of that is just a very political process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that's unique to the Trumps or to the Kushners. That's just how the business works. And now that we have those folks in the White House, we're sort of approaching what those relationships look like and what they could mean for how the White House does business or what business relationships they may already have that we don't know about. But the Kushners in New Jersey specifically were able to essentially, people will say they bought James McGreevy, the governor
of New Jersey, right?
I
know it's, you know, this is, sounds like a lot of preamble before we get to this like more serious question of the conflicts, but I think just to set the stage, Jared Kushner's first foray into business himself was actually a media play, right? He didn't go immediately into the family business.
So he bought the New York Observer, which for folks in the New York media world, for many of them, it has a very special place in their hearts.
Yeah.
It had this sort of alt sensibility, this sort of irreverent sensibility. And Jared came along and, you know, he was a young guy and it was a cool newspaper. And I think there was reason to be excited at the time. It's been interesting to watch The Observer over the course of the election. It was one of the few papers that endorsed Donald Trump, which you wouldn't have been able to guess from its history of endorsements, nor just its political sensibility.
Yeah.
Broadly, you might be able to guess it if you knew who the owner was.
So he has this, he buys The Observer. He marries, I think, a little bit later, Ivanka Trump. And then he really does get involved with more with the real estate business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, you've made the point that politics and real estate go so closely together in New York, in New Jersey. And he seems to have brought that to the White House.
Yeah. So, I mean, when Charlie Kushner was in prison from about 2005 to 2007, that's when Jared really came into his own running that family business. I mean, he stayed in close contact with his father. He'd go down to visit him in the prison camp he was in Alabama, I think pretty much weekly. But that's when he started planning for a big move into Manhattan, and he had his eyes on one property in particular. People laugh at the name now, but it's 666 Fifth Avenue.
Right. Just a normal number. No implications for that.
Take of that what you will. Yeah. 41-story office tower. Actually, I think it's only about five blocks south from Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue. And he waited until his father got out to finalize the plans and everything else, and actually to help finance the purchase. They sold, I think it was 18,000 of the garden apartments his father had amassed in those outer boroughs to help make this play into Manhattan. And it was early 2007, which, of course, in real estate history anywhere was just the tippy top of everything.
Yeah.
And it was the priciest building ever purchased in Manhattan at $1.8 billion.
Amazing.
For a single building. And it's never quite been worth that much since after the financial crisis.
And so the Kushners now, after that crisis, we're in, 2008, 2009, after they see the valuation go down and are, you know, as most of us Americans would call it, deeply underwater. they need to shore up the value of that building, and that becomes imperative, right? That they
So
how do you do that? I mean, I'm refinancing right now. What does that refi look like?
So the building needs hemorrhaging money. And it's looking like it was just a terrible play. They're just swarmed with debt. They have more than $1.2 billion in debt on the thing. And they turn to a guy who's kind of a godfather of New York real estate, very highly regarded, a guy by the name of Steve Roth. He runs a company called Vornado Realty Trust. And in 2011, they allow him to become basically a 50% owner in the property for like $80 million. So you think about that. They bought the whole thing for $1.8 billion, and then they turn over half of the debt burden for $80 million. And you can see just like how far their star has fallen at that point. So it's Vornado.
In other news, is Charlie the father? He's been walked out of his Alabama prison with his T-shirt and his, you know, a quarter.
Yeah, Charlie's very much back in play at this point, and
he's very fit from the prison yard action, and maybe
they're a healthy family. that's really the first time for that marquee property that they need to look for someone else for help, because they just can't do it on their own anymore.
For Roth, for Vornado, was that a decent investment? I mean, he was buying distressed. He was buying some debt.
Yeah, he was buying some debt. He was buying some risk. The price was really low. The name Vornado and Steve Roth definitely meant a lot to Kushners, and like trying to get, because people wouldn't move into the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's an office building. They wouldn't sign office leases there for fear that it wouldn't be around.
Yeah.
In a while, there'd be new management. They'd have to renegotiate again. So having Vornado move in really helped assure people that this was an entity in its current form that was going to be around for a long time.
But that's not the end of the refi.
No, it's not. No. So that worked for a while. And a few things happened then. The refinance allowed the Kushners to have basically the interest rate they were paying on this $1.2 billion of debt. And that worked for a while. Between that and the new reassurance of a new partner, they were able to fill up some offices. But the number 666 currently emblazoned in the building. But at the time, it was Citibank, Citigroup occupied like a quarter of the offices. And they decided to leave. For those not familiar with the New York City real estate market, we've had a lot of new office buildings come online here, a place called Hudson Yards on the west side, and of course, the new Trade Center downtown. And these sort of older, stodgier office buildings are, I mean, here we are in the Panoply office building, right? It's very hip. It's in Brooklyn. 666 Fifth Avenue is not where people are looking to move or go to work every day.
I mean, this is another subplot that also influences the Trumps, which is that the idea of moving in from the outer boroughs to Manhattan, buying a property like 666 Fifth Avenue, which just would have been the gold standard, you know, in the say 1980s, in the 1990s, and then seeing Citibank say flee. And then, of course, seeing the rise of like properties and neighborhoods like the one we're in, which is literally called MetroTech, like just didn't exist a very short time ago.
Is
psychologically sort of disturbing. I mean, you can see Trump being like, but I landed in Manhattan. And then, you know, and also to see 666 lose so much value is also interesting. Because, I mean, this was like parking your money in the best investment, it seemed.
Absolutely.
Like.
Yeah.
So tell me more about how the financing proceeded.
Yeah. So I mean, they weren't able to fill up the office buildings. I don't think during the last 3 or 4 years it's ever topped 80% occupied, which is low in New York. Currently, buildings are 90% plus occupied for the most part. And they had to make a lot of concessions to get the tenants that they did. And they still weren't making the amount of money they needed to cover that debt. So during these last 3 years, finances we've seen show, it's lost money again. It's been losing money again, even though, of course, we are in a total boom property market here in New York. And so it's 6 years since that refinancing, 10 years since he bought the property originally, and they're in roughly the same place they were in before. It's not making money in its current form, and they need to do something different with it if they want to leave without a major loss on the property.
So they're looking around for underleveraged assets, and one of them is Jared Kushner's marriage. tell me how things proceeded once Donald Trump announced his bid for the presidency. Is that?
Well, yeah. So something you have to keep in mind is that when Charlie went to prison and he was convicted, Jared took that, by all accounts, really, really hard. And
why? I mean, was he a snowflake? I mean, your dad's going to prison in Alabama. Just get over it, Jared. He took it hard.
He took it hard. And I mean, he's had this desire to, you know, kind of restore the family name and restore some of that lost prestige and that whole boondoggle kind of wrought on the Kushner family name. And he saw in Trump's campaign an opportunity to kind of diversify what it meant to be a Kushner in roughly the same way Trump did, right? Trump the president, Kushner the brilliant strategist, as some profiles have made him out to be since the election. And so that was a chance, you know, to kind of elevate the profile of the Kushner family. He's now going to be in charge, of course, of brokering a peace between Israel and Palestine in the Middle East. And that's the big bet that we know he saw in a Trump presidency.
And so when do they start turning to, when does Kushner, Jared Kushner, start turning to foreign banks?
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing is, unlike his father-in-law, who went through many bankruptcies, Kushner Companies has never really been, except for this one asset, considered like a bad credit risk, right? Like,
yeah.
They have these kind of unsexy properties everywhere that make regular cash flow, and banks love to lend against something like that. So unlike Donald Trump, who basically has two lenders, he has Deutsche Bank and a commercial real estate lender called Ladder Capital now, and that's about all he has. People up through this election were lining up to refinance most of these Kushner property debts, bankroll these new Kushner purchases.
Good to know.
Except this one, which was so big, and the finances were just not working that they really need a total slam dunk of a deal to make it happen. So we don't quite know when discussions with Anbang Insurance Group started. And that's a huge Chinese insurer. Their ownership structure is opaque. We're not quite sure how closely tied to China's government the business is. But we do know now that there are plans on the table, not yet signed, between Kushner and Anbang that would make them partners in the building, refinance the debt again, give the Kushners a healthy cash payment out, and convert it into this huge gleaming condominium building. And
just residential.
The hope would be to expand the retail portion at the base and create like this mall, basically, in the middle of Manhattan for the first few floors. And then, yes, many, many condominiums, residential, many of which under the plan would be sold actually to wealthy Chinese individuals through the EB-5 program. And that's a program where you can get in the front of the line for green cards if you invest in a project that creates jobs in the U.S., basically. There's actually a swirl of political problems around this right now. One is that China, the government of China, has caught on to this. They're worried about currency devaluation and capital flight, people pulling too much money out of China. So they've kind of clamped down on insurers like Anbang in making these deals. And they're also considering clamping down on the small investors who may become partners in that to get that advanced green card status. And then here in the U.S., Anbang has been suspect by the U.S. government. They bought the Waldorf Astoria Hotel also for a record-setting price. Barack Obama didn't stay there when he came to visit New York, as most presidents do, for fear of espionage. And
you mean like bugs in his room?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And then they also tried to buy this beautiful hotel down in San Diego called the Hotel Del Coronado, which is right next to a very important U.S. naval base. And they weren't able to do that after review by the U.S. government, because ostensibly they didn't want the Chinese owning a hotel that a bunch of naval officers and things would be staying in when they were visiting the base.
Do you think that's paranoid? I mean, or do you think this is like like maybe a quote hostile foreign power trying to buy up real estate and, I mean, get like work a Normandy invasion via real estate financing?
Well, that's been one of the fascinating things about covering this potential deal is Anbang. There's maybe four people in that company who know what's going on with it at any given point in time. And to try to divine what their goals are is rather difficult.
Yeah.
But if they're anything like other folks with money in China, they're primarily driven by the desire to get some capital out of China, get into a safe haven. And the thing about Anbang, and that's the case with the Kushner deal as well, is to do that, they're willing to pay premium prices, top dollar, which in this case is exactly what Kushner needs to get out of this kind of boondoggle of a financing deal at this property.
So how much would the deal with Anbang be worth?
So this deal would value 666 Fifth Avenue, which again, Jared bought for $1.8 billion, which was already a record in 2007. It would value that building at $2.85 billion, so almost $1 billion more a decade later. And that doesn't include the loan refinancing. So all told, it'd be a $4 billion transaction.
In your professional opinion, is that a good deal?
It would be a great deal for Jared Kushner.
So while an administration like Obama's has tried to distance itself from other people's acceptance of investments, so the Waldorf Astoria's transfer to the Chinese, this is a very close conciliary, a very close member of Trump's team, being an active participant and partner with the Chinese, potentially.
Yeah, it would be a total reversal, one from where you're trying to keep your distance and evaluating whether these deals should be happening at all versus the first family actually becoming business partners with this firm.
Yeah. So, I mean, just, I guess, to play devil's advocate, maybe, you know, Trump sometimes says, what's the problem with forging an alliance with Russia? I mean, is there a possibility that the fear that the Waldorf Astoria was going to be bugged is excessive. That, you know, this is a way of, this is kind of glasnost, you know?
Sure, sure.
Can you make that case?
Any of those cases could be made. This deal and any other number of future deals that happen could be totally benign. And that's certainly possible. And the reason why you have reporters watching these deals so closely, however, is because this is a totally new phenomenon mm-hmm. for the U.S. and for the modern presidency during the last four decades to have so many financial ties in so many places. And that's what makes news, right? Is something that we're not used to, something that's kind of foreign and hard to understand and hard to glean what we should take away from it.
Yeah.
And so when you're looking at a deal like this, the deal could totally be above board, actually, except for the fact that we're not quite sure what Ambang's goal is. There's no reason for us to think it's not. But at the same time, it's totally new, and it gets so close to the heart of the Trump administration that you do kind of need to watch these things closely.
So some ethicists have scrutinized this deal, professional ethicists.
Yeah.
Tell us what verdict they rendered.
Well, the ethicists on this one, on Kushner generally, are a really funny group. When he first announced he would be joining the administration in January, he had already hired Jamie Gorelick. She had previously been
deputy AG, right?
Deputy AG under Clinton. And they immediately came out with this conflict of interest plan. And it kind of wowed this group of people who had been waiting for months for Trump to announce something similar. And I think the combination of that and this idea that Kushner, for a certain sort of political person, they hoped he was going to be like an adult in the room. Very early on, he got a free pass, even though his conflicts plan really was only to give ownership back to his family and some assets he deemed conflicts, including 666 Fifth Avenue, while still keeping most of them and just giving up his titles at them. But now, as we've had more time and the Kushner companies has been actively involved in deal making, the ethicists are starting to take a second look. And you don't have to look too hard at a deal like this to say, well, it doesn't really matter that he's divested himself of interest in this building if the owners are his family, which, again, he's incredibly close to, an incredibly close-knit family. And they'll tell you that the primary way to influence anyone is to financially benefit mm-hmm. their family. And that's the state of play we're in right now.
So what we've talked about, the best case scenario, which is this is benign. Parenthetically, who are these ethicists and what's their training? I mean, but if we're going to play ethicist ourselves here without any training, we have no idea if either one of us has a moral center at all. But you've said that the best case scenario is it's a benign investment and it doesn't represent a serious conflict. Worst case scenario.
So the worst case scenario would be that there's an understanding between the Kushners and Ambang that this is, you know, its own sort of peace treaty, the own sort of alliance between the mm-hmm. Kushners and in turn the Trumps and the Chinese. And again, no indication that any of that is true, but that gets to the very essence of what people are concerned about when they talk about conflicts, which is that when you are doing statecraft, when you are doing governing, you are not doing it in the best interest of the American people, but you're doing it with ulterior motives. And that's what these kind of far-flung assets and these deals pose problems for.
I mean, this is super fascinating, partly because when you think about Republicans and the concentration on the private sector, you overlook the interdependence of the private sector and public life, which
Absolutely.
Is meant to be service, and that they're implicated in this way that we can, you know, never get out of, not just New Jersey real estate crossing city councilmen's palms with silver on the way to making, you know, relatively small deals, but all the way up to Ambang potentially or maybe even probably having serious connections to the Chinese government, just knowing how their corporate, you know, culture is structured. And then Trump and the Kushner family, you know, the actual president of the United States. overseeing and possibly easing the way for another private enterprise. So, I mean, this is of interest, I think, to libertarians and to free marketeers as much as to soft-hearted liberals who, you know, just want to see the rich get in trouble, you know?
Right. The response on Capitol Hill to all of this has so far been very partisan. You have Democrats like Elijah Cummings and Elizabeth Warren raising these issues to Treasury or to the White House. And the Republicans who find themselves on the outside of from the administration for some things, you think of John McCain or Lindsey Graham in terms of the Russia issue. Nobody's really touched on this conflicts thing yet on the Republican side, and it continues to be a partisan issue. And my guess is that'll continue to be the case unless there's like a known problem that develops from these dealings.
Or if they accept the word of the nonpartisan ethicists.
Right.
And as we know, this administration and the Democratic Party all defer to these neutral bodies.
Yes.
So this has been really, really interesting. We didn't even get to Jared Kushner fixing the government or himself being under investigation for Russia. But next time.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very, very much for being here, Caleb.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for today's show. Trumpcast is produced by a bunch of soliciting blackmailers. That includes Jason DeLeon, who's our producer. Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts. Andy Bowers is our chief content officer at Panoply. And I'm Virginia Heffernan. Only on Trumpcast, kids. Only on Trumpcast.
And by the way, did you see me in the tractor trailer in the truck, pull my horn, tweeting, saluting, touring, and pulling horns? I can blow a horn like no one else. No one blows a horn like me. Believe me. Believe me.